Hey, welcome back. Thanks for joining us. I appreciate your being here. We're starting a few minutes late. We've got a lot going on, and we have conversations with Dr. Gabriel Cousins. I'm Dr. Richard Sachs. I'm just a PhD doctor, not the medical doctor. That's Dr. Cousins. And we've got a lot to talk about. Long COVID will get us started because a lot of people are sick with something that's being called that. And we're going to get into some other related topics, whatever we have time for in our remaining minutes here. So thanks for being with us, and let's go right to Dr. Gabriel Cousins. Welcome, Dr. Cousins.
Thank you, Dr. Richard Sachs.
You're welcome.
So I just want to greet everybody with love and joy, and it's important to maintain that love and joy in this very disturbed world, okay, where they want you to feel depressed and disconnected from the truth of God and of being alive, okay? So that's the first message. What we do, what we're going to do is we're going to start out, like we always do, with a little dance to get the spiritual joy going, and then a little bit of meditation, and we're going to cover two topics today. And as Richard said, we're going to talk a little bit about long COVID because people don't really know much about it, but it's important. It's important because we need to have, besides knowing it about if you happen to have it, but compassion for people with it because it's subtle. It's not so easy. So let's start with a little bit of dance. The first thing is we after we dance and we meditate for a few minutes, and we use a mantra for the meditation. Yoda and then breath, hey and now breath. Wah and then breath, hey and now breath. Yoda for the base to the heart, hey out to the heart. Wah for the base to the third eye, hey out to the heart. So that is what we're doing. Okay? So now, that being said, after we dance, there's a way of activating the what we call Kundalini energy, the Ruha Kadesh, and that is by look, by touch, and by sound. And by look, I'm going to focus on the energy coming through my eyes, and also by sound. And that can help awaken the spiritual energy, which also is known as Kundalini. So, with that being said, let's go dance.
Thank you.
Okay. So just focus my eyes. And now into meditation. Slowly come out of meditation. And I'm going to talk about a topic that, as you're coming out of meditation, okay, that isn't so clearly understood, but very important to understand, which is the mental and brain effects that we see in long COVID, okay? And long COVID has symptoms. These symptoms I'm going to mention can last up to 2 years. Now, I'm saying it because I see a lot of people who are kind of had COVID and they still have symptoms. Well, what are these symptoms? Brain fog and dementia. Insomnia. Anxiety. Depression. Psychosis. So, you know, mental symptoms as well as poorly functioning brain. Epilepsy. Guillain-Barré and neuromuscular disorders. And these things, and some people can last up to 2 years. And the point I'm making is that this is not psychosomatic. And it's real easy to diagnose these things as psychosomatic. It isn't. The mean age, there are lots of studies that have been done. Okay? And it was kind of done by Lancet Psychiatry. Seven different scientists from Cambridge and Oxford. And they study people in different nations. So we're getting a broader spectrum. The U.S., Australia, U.K., Spain, Bulgaria, India, Malaysia, and Taiwan. So it's a worldwide kind of look at this picture. And the study lasted 2 years and 3 months. So what are we talking about? And there's 1.28 million. Cases versus 1.28 million controls. So this is a very, very serious study. And they found is that the mean age of people who had this is about 42 and a half years old, but the symptoms were worse in people who were 65 and older. About 32 to 34% greater mortality. So this is a brain infection. This is what we're talking about. Its effect on the brain, its effect on consciousness, and its effect on the physical brain as well. So usually the diagnosis is made for about 6 months, just to keep it in mind. And there are really 14 neurological and psychiatric symptoms, and they all had high mortality. So if you're having these symptoms, there is a greater risk, okay? And even after 2 years, the risk of higher mortality was really there, and particularly, you know, in the group with dementia and brain fog. So in other words, if you had COVID, but you didn't have any mental symptoms, you were going to have a less rate of mortality than if you had dementia and you know, the different mental symptoms. And that's the key, okay? But after the, and above the age of 65, the dementia mortality was 71% higher than non-COVID brain fog. So these are pretty significant kind of mentions here. The Delta variant seemed to have the highest risk for everybody. And the reasons why, okay? And one is that they cause accelerated brain cell death, particularly of the stem cells. So the brain could not regenerate itself. That's a pretty important thing, okay? And also attack the blood vessels and decreased oxygen to the brain. Then it had immune problems, you know, anti-immune thing, attack on the nerve sheaths, and cause inflammation of the central nervous system and damage to the brain cell mitochondria, which are the energy factors of the brain. So these are real kind of things. And also the coating, lipid cell metabolism work. Now this sounds kind of like technical lipids. So, well, the brain is about 60% fat, so that a major part of the brain is having its metabolism disrupted. Okay? And in addition, people were losing brain volume. So people who had COVID in the brain basically were losing 2% per year versus normals, which is 0.2% per year. That they, unless we do certain things, which I'm going to get into, there's a normal brain shrinkage. Okay? The good news is the brain can regenerate. And that, I think that's the important thing I want to hear to say, because we're going to talk a little bit about it. It takes about 3 days to make new brain stem cells, so it can regenerate. Now, what is the best thing for regeneration? Which is what my focus is for the moment. Aerobic exercises, and, you know, walking. And walking is actually enough. Meditation increases brain size, stimulates brain metabolism, and walking, just walking 6 to 9 miles per a week, people had 1/2 the amount of cognitive repair. So pretty simple, walking, exercise, and meditation. Now, the thing with COVID is it can make the brain age by as much as 2 years pretty quickly, and some drop in IQ. So people are really affected, okay? In addition, 5G, the spike protein itself activates aging. So we're talking lots of things. Again, meditation slows and reverses the brain aging process in general. And they found that people who meditated, had been meditating for 10 years, at least 30 minutes a day, had significantly better brain function and less brain cell loss. Okay, now what they did know, this is another study, that after vaccination, people appeared older because they're already studying brain degeneration quickly. But the people over 50 years old who were meditating did not seem to have that kind of problem. Now, the people greater than 65 who were meditating regularly had the same kind of brain age as the younger people. And that, of course, is the key, because the whole idea is how do you take care of it. And so I've given you some, besides nutrition, which is a whole other talk, exercise, aerobic exercise, meditation, okay, and walking on a regular basis have been proven to improve brain function and brain, literally regrow your brain, you know, pretty optimally. So we have some ways to go about this, and people do have COVID or feel they're in the post-COVID syndrome. These are really simple things to do. They don't cost anything, and they're there that can really, it's a simple and profound breakthrough at the same time. So it's like a whole lifestyle orientation. Obviously eating, not obviously, but a vegan, you know, 80% life of diet does help the brain function more too as well. So that's just a little bit of an opening. Before we go to another topic, Richard, is there anything you want to share with what I just shared?
Yeah, I think you brought up something that was, I mean, many things that were incredibly important, Dr. Gabriel. And one is exercise. It's free. It has no downside. It could be classified as real medicine, one part of real medicine, which is do no harm. You know, anything that is called medicine that actually hurts you is departing from what medicine is supposed to be. And exercise is one of those things that is 100% good if you know how to do it. and three different types of it that seem to be required in some form, according to almost everybody who's looked into it. Aerobic exercise, like you mentioned, walking being an example, and then resistance exercise, which helps bone density and a lot of other things too, and hormone balance, and stretching, you know, yoga or something like that. And interestingly enough, meditation, as you said, has incredible benefits of all kinds. And it begs the question, what could you do to bring meditation into your default mentality of all day and all night, instead of the worries that people carry around destroying themselves? And I mean, we could go on, but yeah, I thought your comments were great, very useful.
Yeah, it's simple. It's simple. It's a way of life that actually grows your brain and helps protect you against these negative effects, potentially negative effects of COVID. So it's like, whoa, this is easy. Okay. Now, the next kind of topic I want to go into is something that we were discussing last Sunday, which is the whole idea of unconditional love. But we made a point. Unconditional love with boundaries. That's the key to successful unconditional love, because people need to know they're loved no matter what. But there are boundaries about what you agree to let them do. And that's important in relationship, because you can have love in a relationship, it's unconditional, but you also have to love the relationship. That's the part where the boundaries are. I may love you unconditionally, but if you kind of beat me up or do this or that, that's not going to work so well. So we, in relationship, and we're talking not just a marital relationship, we're talking about friendships in different ways, even business relationships. It's fun. These are fundamentals of all relationships. That unconditional love is actually important, but also boundaries of it. And then even with sports. I know that when I was captain of an undefeated Amherst College football team in 1964, part of it is people really fell in love. And the team responded. People think, oh, they're just football players. No, people respond to people loving each other and caring about each other. And that's what makes an undefeated team. It makes for an undefeated relationship in a variety of ways. So this kind of way of thinking, yeah, there are boundaries, but it's still unconditional, is key to kind of optimal, healthy relationships. Dr. Sachs, you want to add something?
Sorry, I couldn't hear that last part, Dr. Gabriel.
I just said that love is key to unconditional love with boundaries is key to any level of healthy relationship.
Yeah, I agree with you completely. And one really important component is you can't, in my experience and what I've observed, you can't love anybody else without having that complimentary attitude toward yourself. If you're carrying around self-condemnation and thinking that you can simultaneously love other people, doesn't seem to work. So work in and on yourself is always critical for being able to help your relationships.
Yes. And one thing about healthy relationships with unconditional love, it does help people who feel loved to love themselves more.
Right, exactly. And also, who do you see yourself as? You know, if you see yourself as a combination of your outside characteristics and what you're good at and things like that, instead of who you actually are, which is spirit, unlimited spirit, connected to God, if you can get closer to seeing yourself as that, it's automatic to see it in other people. Totally transforms relationships.
Yeah, and transforms your life.
Yeah.
We are not alone in this world. relationships are integral to life. And it's not that we need to be dependent on relationships, but we have that love of God within us, but relationships enhance that. And in the play of interaction, they improve kind of, they help us grow. In fact, relationships are a very, very powerful spiritual path. And that is worth considering.
Sounds like a segue into your other connected topic to me.
Well, that was the other connected, is unconditional love,
Right. But, I think one thing to clarify, too, is that unconditional love is not conditional. That's not the kind of boundaries it has. The love remains, but the actions have boundaries. And the actions of others that are acceptable have boundaries. So you can have a complete love for humanity and see spirit in everybody and see the person as connected to God and an immortal being that is basically divine, as you've said before, and still defend yourself. If you're being carjacked and somebody's trying to break into your car and kill you, you may have to use whatever self-defense is at your disposal, including lethal force. And that's why I think, it's really critical to maintain rights to self-defense, firearms, and things that, like people talk about, connected to the Second Amendment. That's not a contradiction to unconditional love, because you're saying this is just a play and you have to play your part the best you can in connection to keeping true to yourself and true to God. But your actions are situationally based. The unconditional love is not.
I remember it really plays out even in sports, and kind of going back to sports.
Yeah.
At the end of our season, we were undefeated. We were playing an undefeated team, last game of the season. And I was middle linebacker and guard, but I tackled their star halfback of the other team. And they hit him pretty hard, and he didn't seem to be getting up. So I reached down and took his hand and pulled him up and patted him on the back and, hey, get back to your huddle. Right. Now, how's that going on? They're supposed to be the bad guys, right? But isn't the way it is. The unconditional love, because we're both athletes competing, it's just a game. It's like, fine. It was like this heart connection happened. I didn't really know who he was. I mean, from the scouting report, I knew his name and who he was. But it was like, hey, we're here. We're on the field. We're just playing. And the game is to hit you hard. But also, I need to pick you up so I can hit you hard again. Okay, so that's kind of the unconditional love part of it.
It's a clue to what unconditional love could really do. And it reminds me of, what was the year, 1941, or maybe after, that they had the Christmas truce in Germany with the attacking Allied forces, and the German forces aligned in trenches against each other.
I think it was World War One. 1918 or 1919.
Yeah, I'm sorry. I was mixing up the two world wars. And the point was they were in trenches against each other, and everybody in the trenches was getting killed, of course, by artillery and other means. And then they'd be replaced with new people, and they'd get killed, and just kept going on and on and on, which has been going on for thousands of years. And then one Christmas Eve, I'm not sure which side it was that decided to do something different. I think it was the Allied side, but I'm not sure.
I think it was.
Yeah. And they said, it's Christmas Eve. Why don't we try an experiment not killing each other for one night? And they actually came out and exchanged presents and started singing. And it was an example of the old saying, what if they gave a war and nobody came? What if it was more than one night? And people like Chris Guy and others are recommending you know, solution to the current global problem of world tyranny and intended extermination, and very similar to that, mass peaceful non-compliance, unconditional love. And the rulers would just be there saying, what's going on? It's so frustrating. We can't get anybody to kill themselves or each other. And it has that much power. And it's available anytime. And it's like your exercise solution. It's free. You can do it whenever you want.
So we have this incredible human potential to touch the heart of each of the other person, to touch the heart of each other, and to know our oneness. And when that happens, all these divisions go away. And we are in this unconditional love, and it really works. There's all kinds of different situations. We've just named a few. So that's an important thing. Another important thing is relationships, as they say, are a spiritual path. Now, how are they a spiritual path? When you unconditionally love somebody, you can trust them. Okay, so relationships require trust as well as going into the risk of intimacy. And that dynamic, you know, surrounding unconditional love is key for spiritual evolution, because you can create the space for the other person to be truly who they are in an unconditional love moment or situation. They can truly be themselves and in that way grow. And you can also take feedback. And you can take feedback because you know that you're being loved and it's coming from that place of love. That's powerful. It's a really important part as a change agent through relationship for your personal evolution. So that's another way to understand this. But the bottom line is unconditional love with some levels of agreed boundaries. The question is, you know, creating in relationship enough of a contract to understand this is the way we're going to be, and that context of unconditional love creates a growth space. And again, unconditional love with boundaries that allow the participants to really develop. That's what I'm saying there.
Right. But you said there was a question.
Well, the question that has to be asked is, are you willing to play?
Oh, right, exactly.
Because if you're having one set of rules, the other person has another set of rules, you can't really get it together. And that is very common in relationships.
Yeah. Yeah, especially when they start out playing the same game and then they decide to go in different directions.
Right. Or they're never starting out playing the same game because their programs from their family of origin are different than your programs from your family of origin, and you haven't had that time to bring them together into a level of unity.
Right. But no matter what the people in your relationships decide to do, you have to make the decision for yourself what game you're going to play, even before relationships.
Right.
And then you'll know where you should be.
Okay. So that's kind of the essence of that. What I was going to ask the question was, we're set up to take questions, I believe.
That's true. It's just most people are still hearing this as an archive, but we're encouraging them to start listening in the lifetime. And there are some people who are doing that. So yeah, you can ask a question. And if they listen later, they can also send in the answer by email.
So that's what I was going to be.
Yeah.
And I can be reached at info@treeoflife.nu. Info. Yeah. And treeoflife.mn.co to find my website where I have all the different programs that we're doing throughout the week. as well as spiritual fasts and a variety of different programs that we offer. So just a few note on that, and Richard, maybe share how people can reach you. And
yeah, you can reach me at richard@lostartsradio.com. And there's a contact form, like with Dr. Gabriel, there's a contact form for me and for Doug and for our programs in general at lostartsradio.com. But richard@lostartsradio.com works. And technical questions to doug@lostartsradio.com is also good.
Doug@DOUG.
Yeah.
Okay. So we're just kind of combining a few things. So we're going to continue to do these different kind of topics that we bring up. And if people want, we can tell you what the topics are going to be and we can advance. It takes a little bit more effort on our part, but if I get some feedback that way, we'll do that.
What's the question that you want people to respond to at this point?
Well, the question is, would you like me to list the topic a few days in advance before Monday night? That's the question.
Right. Interaction, and so that we address the things that are most relevant to the audience.
Right. And that's the second question, is just that. What is really relevant? What do you want to hear about? I do the COVID review as it's appropriate. Like, this is a pretty important one to know about post-COVID. It's more than a little important for your own compassion for other people and also for yourself.
Right. And in your COVID comments about long COVID, one thing that I think you did, which was great, is focus the diagnosis on the symptoms, because it's much more important to go by the symptoms than the name of a disease. You know, it really doesn't matter what it's called. It doesn't really matter what it's part of. It matters what's happening and what's causing it and how to reverse it. And I thought you did a great job on that. Calling it a virus is highly questionable. And some great doctors, Cowan and Kaufman, and great investigative journalists like John Rappaport and others, have brought up the fact that there is no proof at all that any of these viruses are what's causing disease. And there's no good refutation of that I've found. And I've had some great virologists on to interview, and they've been completely unable to refute what Cowan and Kaufman and others are saying.
Yeah, I agree with it. I almost see it as a convenience to call it, a virus. We could be in medieval times and call it something else. You know, make up whatever name. But people use that as a kind of a way of trying to speak to it. But there's no proof that viruses exist in what we're saying are infective agents.
Right. And I think that's hard for most people within the system to grasp, because it calls into question so many things that they've memorized as unquestionably true.
Right.
It's emotionally hard to look at.
And the fact that PCR tests are about 90-95% inaccurate, and were never designed to test for COVID anyway.
No, they're great, except for the problem that they're not a test. They're basically a high-tech magnifying glass for the laboratory. But you know, that's a side issue. The people are sick with short and long versions of COVID, and all kinds of things are coming up in that. They're differentiating between the COVID BV and AV, which means before vaccine and after vaccine. And those are different, somewhat different and somewhat similar conditions, right? And there's also the finding that all the people who have been diagnosed with that have certain peptides of synthetic venoms in their system, which Dr. Artis has talked about at great length.
Right.
Very interesting stuff. As well as the nanotech and all that has been found. Nanotech has been found even in bodies of people who have died after the vaccine, and they're still transmitting signals. So there's a lot of interesting stuff going on there. But what it all always comes down to is, how do you fix it? And that's what you were addressing.
Right. And how do you prevent it? So if you go to my website, treeoflife.mn.co, I have a 2-page discussion with all the nutrients and way of life that helps protect you against getting COVID.
treeoflife.mn.co, yeah.
Okay, so I want to bless everybody and thank you for listening to us, and let us share our knowledge and wisdom with you. And may you be blessed that you take this and share it with people around you. And most important, share your heartfelt love with those around you. So peace would be with you. Aho, amen. And thank you, Richard, Dr. Richard, and Doug, for running this show.
Thank you, Dr. Gabriel. That was great. And just comes down to putting it into practice now. And that's on an individual level, but also on a world level. There's a really urgent need for the actions of the world to change and to put into practice what was on the bumper sticker, you know, a long time ago. What if they give a war and nobody came? It's what Chris Skye and David Icke and others who are leaders in the peaceful non-compliance movement are saying. I think the way Chris puts it is, just say no. You know, you don't have to get into a big war, and you're not trying to attack and damage people who disagree with you or anything. It's just, if you receive direction from a so-called authority who tells you to do something that is basically self-damaging or suicidal or damaging to other people or both, then you just say no. And where does that come from? Because to be effective, that needs to be on a big scale. You know, if one person says, they're finding this in China, for example, right now with the mass protests that are going on. And in China, to do a protest, you have to be willing to die even more than other places, because it's completely unacceptable. And the police will take you off and kill you or harvest your organs or things like that. And yet people are doing it right now. The consciousness is beginning to overcome the fear of authority. And they're just saying, no, we're not going to do this anymore. This COVID stuff is ridiculous. They are still getting welded into buildings in China. And as Klaus Schwab of the WEF says, that's the model for the whole world. He said that's a very attractive model for how to run a country. And he's on video saying all kinds of stuff like that. And it, even with that, and with the building of these modern-day huge concentration camps for dissidents that's going on all over the world right now, if people say no, the whole scenario changes and the same outcome gets reversed. So the people who have to just say no is the general population, us regular people who are just running around trying to figure out and do a good job with what's going on, but also the people within the system. If teachers in schools are taught to teach CRT and that you're the wrong gender and should mutilate your body immediately if you're a 9-year-old, you know, and you're told to do that, if you have, you know, what is it?